Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 35 of season 8 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is my good friend Hal Bryan from so many different podcasts, but most recently the October Sky Minute. Welcome back to the show, Hal.
It's great to be back, Rob. Thanks for having me this week.
All right. Just try not to do any flat topping this today.
Yes, no flat heading for me.
Flat heading. Hey. See, I even got the term wrong. You know,
See, at least I've learned it now, and it's in my officially in my lexicon, and you won't trip me up with that one again.
Excellent. That's the way. Isn't that what we're here for, to learn?
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Now you know something new that you didn't know beforehand. All right.
You're here.
So minute 35 begins with Marshall continuing to read his letter and ends with Bryce looking over at Marshall as he finishes the letter. So basically this entire minute is Marshall continuing to read this letter to a Mrs. Bixby. Right. So I'm going to quickly just go through the text of it, and then afterwards we'll try to get a little bit more into some of the stuff that's said here, because this is a minute of a monologue. That's what it basically comes down to, and there are a few times when there are a few actions that happen in the course of his reading. So I might mention them as it goes through, but basically it's just listening to this, 1 minute monologue. And so he starts off by saying, "Five sons who have died gloriously on the field of battle. I feel how weak and fruitless must be any words of mine that would attempt to beguile you from the grief of a loss so overwhelming." And they give us a shot of both Sanders and Bryce that are listening, contently. You know, everyone's paying a lot of attention to what's going on. "But I cannot refrain from tendering to you the consolation that may be found in the thanks of the Republic they died to save." And as he's saying this, he sits down in his chair. And he puts the page down also, because then he continues from here on. He says it all by heart. So Harv Presnell is a good actor that's able to say this by heart. "I pray that our Heavenly Father may assuage the anguish of your bereavement and leave you only the cherished memory of the loved lost and the solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a sacrifice upon the altar of freedom. Yours, very sincerely and respectfully, Abraham Lincoln." And then at that point, once again, we see Bryce just looking on through the course of this thing. Again, it's amazing the way they thought of, making this movie based basically on this idea of the letter and the Sullivans and all that stuff. You know, how they put all these elements together. You know, I just love the way that it fits so well.
Right. And do you know, did the inspiration come from something like hearing the story of the Sullivans and then somebody saying, what if that, what if we had brothers like that and we brought D-Day into it or the Bixby letter or anything?
Well, that the according to the research that I did, it came from the fact that, the whole idea of the Sullivan brothers and it's actually connected to Band of Brothers.
Ah.
Because I actually heard this story from George Lewis Jr., who we will hopefully be having an interview with him at the end of the season.
Terrific.
I've had a conversation with him.
Chris got me. Tell him I said hello.
You know him too?
I know him. We've had him on a podcast. And in addition to that, he works with another childhood best friend of mine, Eric Flint, who's retired Army, retired director of the Fort Lewis Army Museum. And he works for Stephen Ambrose doing tours of historic sites.
And I don't think he works for Stephen Ambrose anymore.
Well, he works with Stephen Ambrose company.
Yes.
And so he and George also know each other and very well. And George is on a lot of those tours and things. So, so Eric is a terrific, very well respected historian and knows his way around really all of the major battlefields of certainly Western Europe.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been in contact with him and I had a 45-minute conversation with him. And we're hopefully going to be doing an interview in the next few weeks. And he mentioned to me the whole connection that in the Ambrose's book, because he said that one of the guys in Band of Brothers was friends. It's connected to the Sullivan brothers, but there's also the idea that there's another group of brothers, the Nyland brothers. And one of the guys from, Easy Company was good friends with one of the Nyland brothers, and that's where it came from. Fritz Nyland was in the 501 in the 101st Airborne, and he was best friends with Skip Muck. Who's one of the guys who was killed? Who was a guy from Easy Company who was killed? They both grew up in Tonawanda, New York. That's what it is. So that was the connection. So basically, based on that conversation, they came up with the idea of how to do this story. Connecting both the Nyland brothers and the Sullivan brothers and all of that. And they wrapped it. And then obviously the Bixby brothers, putting them all together in the whole thing. And again, it came from the fact that Fritz was part of the 501. Like that was the connection. That's basically the connection to Band of Brothers. Because Preston died on Utah Beach. It was one of the brothers. One of the other brothers died also. I think it was Robert who died. Yeah. He was killed in action also on that day. But again, when I get to it, people can listen to, the story directly from George Luz's Jr.'s mouth.
Terrific.
He'll definitely tell us the full story, not the one I'm trying to tell.
George is a terrific guy, and he does a magnificent job of carrying on his father's legacy.
Yeah, for sure. No question about that. And Chris got me in touch with him.
Oh, great.
So, that's how I got in touch with him. Right. So back to the idea of the Bixby letter, right? So, the question that we brought up yesterday is, first of all, is it a real letter and is it the real letter, being used here? So the answer, first of all, is it is a real letter. Abraham Lincoln wrote the letter in November 1864 to Lydia Parker Bixby because it was thought that she had lost 5 sons in the Union Army during the Civil War. It's considered as one of Lincoln's 3 greatest addresses or letters, I guess you can say. The most famous one, the best one that people say is?
Of course, the Gettysburg
address. Gettysburg, right. And his second one was his second inaugural address. There's a lot of controversy about the whole thing. Because some people claim that Bixby herself had Confederate sympathies and that at least 2 of her sons did survive the war, and that maybe Lincoln himself didn't write the letter, that it was written by his private secretary John Hay. Nobody's really knows the full truth of it, but it was printed in the Boston Evening Transcript and the Boston Evening Traveler the day that she received the letter.
Interesting.
So again, it's the history behind it was that so Lydia Parker married a shoemaker named Cromwell Bixby in 1826, and they had at least six sons and three daughters before he died in 1854. And then at some point she moved to Boston, was living in Boston with her children. And basically he we talked yesterday about who the adjutant general was of Massachusetts, William Schuyler. So there was a father of five Union soldiers that was trying to get a discharge. So Schuyler then wrote to the governor of Massachusetts about it, and he mentioned that 2 years earlier he had dealt with a widow named Lydia Bixby trying to visit one of her sons who was in an army hospital. And because she had come to his office claiming that five of her sons had died fighting in the Union. And in the end, through the bureaucracy of how everything works, it eventually came to the desk of Lincoln that there was this woman whose five sons were killed. Again, there's no proof that there really were five of them that were, because the understanding is that it's possible that two of them actually survived. But it was printed in Thanksgiving because Schuyler showed up at the Bixby house on Thanksgiving and delivered the letter to her. Again, as stated, at probably two of her sons survived the war. She had five sons. She had Edward, Charles, Henry, Oliver, and George. And some of them, like I said, so Edward was was 18 when he enlisted, and he actually survived. He returned to Boston after the war. Apparently he they thought he was dead, but he wasn't. Then you have Charles, who was born he was about 20 when he enlisted, and he was killed in action during the Battle of Fredericksburg. Then you had Henry Cromwell Bixby. He was in his 30s at that time, and he actually survived and ended up passing away about 5 or 6 years after the war. But he had contracted tuberculosis while he was a soldier. So maybe that was part of the reason why they thought that he hadn't survived. Then you had Oliver Bixby, who was also in his early 30s. He was killed in action in Petersburg. There's a Battle of Petersburg near in Virginia. And then the fifth son was George, who was about 25 at the time when he enlisted, and he was captured at Petersburg, and he was held prisoner for a number of years, and nobody knows what happened to him.
Really?
So yeah, so again, there. They know that two of them died. They know that one went. I guess we can go back to yesterday's anacronyms, or yesterday's acronym. I guess he's a PKIA. And then two of them did survive. And in the letter that Schuyler wrote to the War Department, it said that Edward died in at Folly Island, when apparently he didn't. Actually, there is no Edward here even. That's really funny. We hit oh, it's
Interesting.
Arthur Edward. Okay, it's
Interesting.
Arthur
Oh,
Edward was the
Arthur
name.
Edward.
Right,
Okay.
there you go. Nobody really knows what the truth is of the whole thing. So Lydia Bixby herself passed away in 1878, in Massachusetts General Hospital, and Schuller had called her the best specimen of a true-hearted Union woman I've yet seen. But there were many questions that arose afterwards as to whether she really was a loyal Union supporter or not. There are people that had met her that apparently Bixby kept a house of ill fame and was perfectly untrustworthy and as bad as she could be.
No kidding.
They said that her sons were tough, with some of them too fond to drink. One of them even served a jail sentence for some of the things that he had done. So again, there's a lot of questions about it, but I guess the question that's most important to us here is this letter real? And the truth is, yes, it's real. Whether the information might have been incorrect as to the circumstances, that's a separate issue. But when you're looking at it from Lincoln's perspective, Lincoln was writing something based on something that he really meant, or at least his private secretary, John A, really meant, with the way that he wrote it.
Yeah, it's a powerful connection. It's and such a reminder that perhaps the greatest orator in American history. Just Lincoln's wording throughout this and talking about trying to ass or not being able to assuage the grief. It's just lyrical.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Now, the quote from this, "the solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a sacrifice upon the altar of freedom," is actually inscribed at the base of the statue of Lady Columbia, which is at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific in Hawaii.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow, that's interesting.
On September 11th, 2011. So George Bush read the Bixby letter during the memorial ceremony at the World Trade Center site.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's interesting also. And the one thing that I love about this last shot of this minute, okay, if you take a look at it, what do you notice in the very last shot that is somewhat interesting? Let's put it that way.
Let me bring up the clip and kind of scrub through it here.
If you go to second 59, you can see what I'm
59.
talking about.
Oh, sure. We see Bryan Cranston sort of feeling the weight of the whole thing, and then of course we have the famous portrait of George Washington just over
Exactly.
his shoulder.
Exactly. We're talking about Abraham
Well,
Lincoln, and there's a portrait of
right.
George
This
Washington.
portrait of Washington. That just makes me think of Jack Nicholson in Batman in '89, when they're going through the museum and defacing all the art, but they come to this portrait of Washington, and he stops one of his goons from doing anything to it because he just says the dollar bill.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's right. And that's all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about it?
Now again, I think we were talking about how nicely some of these minutes happen to break up, and this one is just so perfectly encapsulated. And a fascinating trip through the history of that actual letter. That's really remarkable, especially knowing that there was some controversy and debate and things downstream, but
Well, there still
at
is.
its and still is, but at its core, the message of that letter is such a perfect fit for the mission that these guys are in the process of deciding to send Captain Miller and his people on.
Correct. No, it's done really well. No question about that.
Yes,
And
absolutely.
I to answer your second question as to whether George Marshall should have had the original letter, my assumption is the answer is no. I don't think after
Right.
80 years, the original letter would have been in as good shape, but it must have been retyped or reprinted or something like that for Marshall to have it,
Sure.
on hand. But again, that's just a guess.
That would have been a real stretch. But you know, interesting to think about how those things survive in archives and things like that. But something that did end up having greater historical significance, which I wasn't really aware of, certainly wouldn't have ended up in private hands. You know, some other letter of lesser note signed by Lincoln, could somebody like Marshall have had it in the 40s? Not impossible.
Okay.
But I would agree with you that I would say almost certainly not this one.
Well, I actually now found the true answer to your question. Okay. The fate of the original letter given to Bixby is unknown. William Bixby, a son of Oliver, told the New York Times in 1925 that he did not know what happened to the letter after his grandmother received it, though he doubted it still survived. A few days later, his sister told the Boston Herald that she also did not know the letter's fate, but speculated that Bixby may have torn it up, resenting that it incorrectly said five of her sons had been killed. William's son, Arthur Bixby, told the New York Sun in 1949 that he recalled his father telling him that she had angrily destroyed the letter after receiving it. In the early 20th century, it is sometimes claimed that the original letter could be found on display at Brasenose College at the University of Oxford, along with other great works in the English language. Lincoln scholar F. Laurelston Bullard investigated the claim in 1925, discovering that it is untrue, and the college had never even heard of the Bixby letter. So there you go.
Well, there you have it.
So
interesting stuff.
The answer is no. At least according to the Bixby family.
Yeah, and see, sometimes we do get a definitive answer.
There you go.
That's great.
That's true. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called the Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg directed movies. So once again, please start with your number five and work your way up.
All right. In number five, Jurassic Park, the first one. Number four, another one we talked about earlier this week, Catch Me If You Can. In third place, which is sort of fitting, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. In second place, kind of cheated a little bit. I sort of put the original Indiana Jones trilogy in sort of one category, but if pressed, I would simply just put Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You are being pressed, so there you go.
Okay, well then consider me pressed. So Raiders of the Lost Ark. The number one spot would be Always. Spielberg's remake of the classic Spencer Tracy film, Guy Named Joe. Yes. Yeah. Just absolutely wonderful movie with some absolutely spectacular flying. My honorable mentions would be Empire of the Sun, which we talked about with John Williams' score. And much more recently, Ready Player One, which I know people are mixed about, especially fans of the original book, which I am. But to me, that movie was just a lot of fun. And and I love a good fun movie. It's, you know, it's not necessarily there to teach me anything or change how I see the world, but just sit back, relax, put it on, have fun spotting all the little references and just enjoy it. It's become a favorite.
All right.
Excellent. But not in the top five.
I understand. You can still have a favorite that's in the top 10, you know, the way these things work. You know, when someone has such a rich filmography, it's hard to narrow it down to five. It's understandable.
Right.
Completely understandable. Absolutely. All right. Excellent. So, Hal, would you like for one final time to tell people where they can find Hal Bryant?
Absolutely. You can find me all over the internet, podcast-wise, in terms of the pop culture world. Find me on the Rocketeer Minute and the October Sky Minute, along with my co-host Jim O'Kane, on both of those series. And you can find those everywhere you get a podcast, including their own sites, OctoberSkyMinute.com, RocketeerMinute.com. You can find me, my voice on EAA's podcast, Experimental Aircraft Association. I'm frequently a co-host on there, not on every episode. And that podcast is called EAA's The Green Dot. And you talk about getting cleared to land on the green dot. Otherwise, you find me all over EAA.org and in the associated publications. And if you want to reach out and connect to me directly, you catch me on Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, just at good old Hal Bryan, and I'd love to say hello.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can send me an email to movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Facebook. So, Hal, this has been a lot of fun. Very educational for me, too. Hopefully you enjoyed yourself, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's always fun to plow through these with you, Rob. And it's amazing how you put all this together, and especially how you shoulder so much of the burden just on yourself. That's a remarkable thing. I'm spoiled to have such a terrific co-host in Jim O'Kane. And I know he's a regular guest and a mutual friend, but kudos to you for making it all happen.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. I mean, again, it's the type of idea that, you know, I don't feel it as a burden because I enjoy doing it. You know, it's like the idea that, sure. You know, if you find a job that you love doing, you don't feel like you're going to work. So same type of thing, even though I don't get paid for this, but, I think that makes it even more fun because this is, you know, I'm doing this because I want to do it, not because I'm getting something out of it. Financially or anything like that. You know, I get the enjoyment of discussing some of my favorite movies in minute detail with other movie lovers who have the same ideas.
Here.
Yeah. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest, but until then, have a great weekend, everybody, and earn this.
That's right. Earn this.
Reveries of days gone.